Kia ora.
Kia ora tātou, greeting from New Zealand. It's a privilege to be here to give the Niall C. Brady lecture. I don't know Niall C. Brady, but he's been a constant companion of mine through my 40 years of soil science, through his book, The Nature and Properties of Soil. The nature and properties of soil are very important in quantifying our natural capital. When we talk about natural capital, we take an analogy from economics in terms of built capital and financial capital. They are our stocks of natural materials and energy. And as with built capital and financial capital, we get rent or interest from our natural capital flow ecosystem services. Services between the stocks or services from the stocks to us, which are hugely valuable. The Millennium Ecosystem Assessment quantified those and classified them into supporting, provisioning, regulating, and cultural. We know a lot about provisioning because we can measure it in terms of dollars or kilograms. We as soil scientists know a lot about supporting processes. We don't know so much about regulating and cultural services. Sometimes we don't pay for them, but they're hugely valuable to us. They're hugely valuable to us because they're the constituents of our well-being. As soil scientists, and there's a few in the room here, we've been out there quantifying natural capital and valuing the ecosystem services that we get from our soils and our waters. What's really interesting, that recently in New Zealand, our Institute of Economics Research, now these guys are dry economists, and they've just published a report on valuing our natural assets. They note that we, the producers and consumers, get much value from our natural assets, and much of it's intangible. Being intangible, that worries economists. And so they say there's a fundamental reason to make a special effort to measure the value of these natural assets, to make sure we make the right decisions. And so they are proposing to improve our understanding of the value of natural assets, giving them more consistent weight in the decision-making and improving the way we manage them. So we have allies in our economists and how we can bring our skills of understanding the nature and properties of soils and how we can value them from the ecosystem services. Water, of course, is a prime natural capital stock. But it's the soil, that thin skin, that is hugely important in terms of the flows of mass and energy through that thin skin. And so we as soil scientists need to understand better how we derive value from the ecosystem services of the water biota, our carbon and our energy. And the world's going to be a different place. It's changing now. If we look at what the IPCC suggests that might happen by the end of the century, some places are going to be drier by a large amount. When you look at some of the regions of the Middle East, North Africa, South Africa, Australia, Chile, Argentina, Central America. Some places are going to be a lot wetter. And in the case of where it's drier, we're going to need water to maintain the food supply. In a recent paper on water resources research, Wada et al. Looked to see where we were getting our water from. Across the world, we get water from the root zone that comes as rain, the green water. And when that runs out, we go to our reserves and our rivers, lakes, and renewable groundwater, and that's the blue water. But there's another component there, non-sustainable groundwater extraction, the dark blue. And if you have a look there, in those boxes there, are the percentage of our water take that is unsustainable. In case you can't see it, 23% of the water take in the US is unsustainable. When we go to the Middle East, we see that the water takes there are close to 100% in terms of some of the countries like Qatar, which is 78% of their water take is unsustainable. So we have to be very, very careful because groundwater depletion, the overdraft of our blue water resources, is a long-standing issue. And so there is a need to invest politically, institutionally, and economically to value water and to make sure that we have some responses available so that we don't reduce our food productivity. Can we produce enough food? Well, there's a recent paper just come out from Water Resources Research looking at comparing a baseline of 1960, there goes the population. Our cereal and meat production has gone up faster than our population. So that's really good news. But when we look in detail, we can see that our water and land have shrunk. So how have we maintained that production? Well, we're using built capital. We're using nitrogen to maintain that food supply of meat and cereals. And so we have to be very careful that we don't compromise our natural capital stocks and reduce the ecosystem services they provide through that use of nitrogen. The National Geographic is a fantastic magazine. It goes into the living rooms around the world. And in 2013, they had this article, Our Fertilized World. And so when the world reads, if we don't watch out, agriculture could destroy our planet, we have a problem. We as soil scientists and our industries need to address that problem. You might not be able to read the caption there, but that's Lake Erie in 2011. So we do have a problem. Not only our water quantity, but our water quality, if we hope to get the ecosystem services from our soils and our waters that we hope for. And we as soil scientists have an important role in that, because the boundary condition for the receiving water bodies is what we do on the land. That top meter or so is hugely important in terms of the processes going on there that are transmitted by drainage and leaching to our receiving water bodies. I want to conclude with a couple of case studies of how we need to maintain natural capital and sustain ecosystem services. And one of them, the first one, is on rainwater, green water management in Africa. And the second one is blue water or groundwater management in the Middle East. We all know that the population is going up very rapidly. And by the end of the century, we'll probably get to 11 billion people. But if we look in detail at that, we'll see something happening. Potentially by the end of this century, Africa will be the largest, the most populous continent in the world. Africa missed the Green Revolution, and its population is increasing dramatically. And if you have a look over here, the dark and the red, is that most of the sub-Sahelian Africa is arid or semi-arid, if we exclude the Congo and parts of West Africa. So potentially by the end of the century, it could have 5 billion people and large areas where water will be absolutely critical. I want to talk about a public-private aid program that we are carrying out in Kenya. We're looking at 1,700 smallholders who are contracted to an avocado oil processing factory. The Kikuyu word for avocado is dog fruit, because that's what they did with them. The Kenyans don't eat avocado, but they've got lots of avocado trees. And so this company has gone in and now providing the smallholder farmers with a revenue stream that comes from the avocados to press for oil. But these are old, poorly managed trees and the hitherto unharvested fruit. So we're working there to improve the fruitfulness of these trees and enable drought avoidance. So it's all about managing soil water and some tactical use of groundwater, because there is no infrastructure for irrigation. So early when we went there, we put in some GDOT sensors. These are watermark sensors attached to a little, it's an Australian device, and you, from the number of dots, you can tell the soil water potential. So in October, prior to the arrival of the short rains, the avocado trees are flowering, but they're under drought. Then the short rains arrive, and they disappear about Christmas or into the new year. And that's when the avocados are trying to fill and produce their fruit so that can be crushed for oil. And that generally happens before the long rain arrives. So we have a problem. Well, we actually have two problems. The drought during flowering and the drought during fruit filling. So what can we do about it? Well, we can save soil water by pruning these big old trees. get rid of a lot of the leaf, bring the water use down. It brings the growth easy, lower down. It enhances the fruitfulness of the tree. The pickers don't have to climb 15 metres into the air to get the avocados, and so it's safer harvesting. And it can reduce the water use and hopefully enable drought avoidance. And so what we did is we have measurements in the tree. And you can see here's a big old tree doing between 300 and 400 litres per day. And we went in and pruned it. And we got it down in a day. And so the water use now is down at 200. So that's 150 litres of green water we're saving every day to stay in the root zone that can hopefully last through the dry seasons before either the short rains or the long rains arrive. So we took about 40% of the leaf off. That of course has some damage to productivity in the year, but the year after, now down to 3 and 5 metres, we have a wave of flowering low down in the tree, a greater surface of lit canopy that is producing a large number of flowers that you can see there. So that's one way, managing the green water to achieve the ecosystem services that we want. And when we had a look in detail now with some TDR and some heat pulse, we can see that impact. You can see here is the flowering before the short rains arrive, it dries out again, there's a rogue rainstorm here, and then with root filling. And we had our heat pulse, and this is quite a dramatic pattern of actual tree water use across 4 different trees. You can see the short rains arrive, the tree water use goes up, that's fantastic in terms of tree productivity. A rogue rainstorm comes along, but the tree is still trying to fill fruit. At that stage, it's using between 10 and 40 litres a day, and all of that water is being drawn below 1 metre. So it's very difficult for that tree, even when we've got the leaf area down. And there's no infrastructure to develop irrigation. Oops. I pushed the wrong button there. Can I bring that back? Yep, okay. So we're developing a pilot project around drought relief using old recycled 20 litre drinking water bottles and creating a little portable drip irrigation system so we can get water onto those trees. Labour's not a problem, and the properties are small. And so we can take green water that might be captured from the roof. Because every Kenyan woman has 6 children on average, there is always someone to help draw the water from the well. There are some unavoidable inefficiencies. The chooks seem to like the water from the drip irrigation, but then again, that must be a different ecosystem services because they produce eggs. I'd like to conclude by looking at how we manage groundwater resources in one of the more difficult parts of the world where groundwater is turning very saline. That is the salinity change between 1969 and 2012 in the United Arab Emirates. And even the blue colour there does mean an increase in salinity. So the water quality is declining, and furthermore, the water is actually dropping down quite dramatically, such there's only about 50 years of water left. And it's been used to irrigate, in this case, date palm trees. And so we've been working for a long time in hardwood trees, dicotyledons, with sap flow measurements to look at water use, and that's quite easy because the flow is greatest in the outer annuli of the xylem. But of course, with a date palm, it's right in the middle, it's a monocot. And so we've had to rebuild our probe so we can get right into the centre to measure the velocity profile moving up the date palm. We've also using TDR rods in the desert sands. They're saline soil, so we've had to sleeve the rods. That's the bad news. The good news is it's quite easy to bang them in straight down to 2 metres. And so when we look at that in the date palms, they are applying in this plot here some 40,000 over the first 6 months of the year, 40,000 litres of irrigation. The trees have only transpired 15,000 litres, so some 22,000 litres has drained. Some of that drainage performs a valuable ecosystem services in terms of leaching salt from the root zone. So our challenge now is to match the irrigation with the tree's water use and the soil service of salt leaching. And we're doing that across different date cultivars at different salinities. You can see the water use of the trees that are using 5 decisiemen water or 15 decisiemen water, and you can see the impact of that on this long-standing date cultivar trial where the salty water is having an impact on tree water use and tree productivity. And that work has been carried out by Ahmed El-Mouani, and he's doing his PhD with us on that, and around protecting the valuable natural capital of our groundwater. We're also having a look in the Emirates at another project, and that is using treated sewage effluent, which is not really natural capital, because the water used for the cities in the Emirates all comes from desalination plants, and so that's really built capital. And then it's rebuilt again through treated sewage effluent, and so we now have a valuable asset of built capital that we can use to irrigate the amenity forests that perform many, many services, from sand dune stabilisation through to biodiversity. And already after just 5 months, you can see the trees receiving the treated sewage effluent are far happier than the ones receiving groundwater, which is at about 10 decisiemen. And we're getting the interesting phenology of the desert tree species in terms of how they go through cycles of leaf growth. And Wafa Al-Yamani, and she is doing her PhD with us on using the effluent to obtain valuable ecosystem services from built natural capital. So just to conclude, I think it's our role as soil scientists to make sure that we can sustain the returns we get from our natural capital stocks of our soils and our waters and obtain the ecosystem services that we require. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Brent. Always interesting presentations. That's why you're a popular speaker, I guess. I'd like to present you with this plaque as a recognition of the 2015 Niall C. Brady Frontiers of Soil Science Lectureship. So thank you very much again, Brent.